phenomenon of canceled priests is becoming all too common. Why does this happen, and what can we do to reconcile priests with their bishops? What can we do to help priests that have been unjustly canceled? Well, there's a conference coming up that's going to address this specific issue. We're going to talk about that today and much more on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before I get started, let's go ahead and just remind everybody to subscribe to the channel, like it wherever you might listen to it or watch it. I really appreciate that. Also, follow us on social media at Crisis Mag. So today we have a return guest, Father John Lovell. He is the co-founder of Coalition for Canceled Priests, an organization which supports faithful priests who seek to return to active ministry after being unjustly canceled by their bishops. They have a conference coming up pretty soon on June 23rd and 24th. They have a banquet on the night of the 23rd, all-day conference on 24th featuring Jesse Romero. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. But we just want to talk also with Father Lovell just in general about the coalition and what's going on with that. So thanks so much for being on the program again, Father.
Eric, thank you so much for having me. It's a great pleasure to always be with you. Your interview with me 11 months ago is still talked about. People still bring it up, and I usually reference it when people ask me questions about the coalition. So thank you again for having me on.
That's great. Thanks for letting me know that. So we interviewed you last year, and so I'll link to that in the show notes to make sure if people want to watch that one as well. But for those who haven't seen that and don't know much about you or about the coalition, why don't you just briefly tell us about your own experience being a canceled priest?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a priest this year celebrating 15 years. I was ordained in 2007 for the Diocese of Rockford in Illinois by Bishop Thomas G. Doran. May his soul rest in peace. He passed away about 6 years ago. For the first 5 years, I was associate pastor, taught in high schools. I also was administrator of a parish, associate vocation director, which we talked about the last time. And then the last year of active ministry in 2011-2012, Bishop Doran sent me to the Dominican House of Studies in Washington, D.C. to get a license in sacred theology. In the spring of 2012, Bishop David Malloy was appointed Bishop of Rockford. And that July, when I was home on break from DHS, I was called into his office. He was only a bishop at this point for 6 weeks, and he removed me from ministry. He had first tried to suspend me, never told what I did wrong. He just said that he heard things and he was worried. Those are his words. And he tried to suspend me. Rome overturned that that same summer. Surprisingly, in August, Rome overturned that when Rome is usually shut down. And then he withdrew the suspension against me and issued a new decree the very next day after withdrawing the suspension, where he restricted my ministry in a non-penal, non-judicial way. And for the last 10 years, I've been out of ministry, not because I'm suspended, but because I am removed in a non-penal, non-judicial way. And I always like to tell everyone, when you figure out what that phrase means, let me know, because my canon lawyers would love to know what that means. And so for the last 10 years, I've been fighting for my good name, both in the diocese as well as in Rome. And about a year ago, Father Jim Parker, a priest of the Diocese of Rockford, a great pastor, was removed. No good reason was given, and he was not given another assignment. And that's why when we decided to start the Coalition for Canceled Priests, because we realized across the country, there are priests who are being sidelined, they're being canceled, they're just simply being ignored, not because they've done something wrong. I'm not accused of anything. There's no delict, no crime that I'm being accused of. It's just simply because the bishop doesn't like me. And he's heard things, and he just simply wants to sideline me as well as all of these other priests. And it's usually because we either stand up for the traditional mass, either we preach the truth on controversial issues such as abortion, contraception, homosexuality. And lately, especially in the last couple of years, priests are getting canceled because they are not going along with the draconian mandates that the bishops have tried to put in place when it comes to COVID, let alone forcing people to get the jab or telling people that they're morally obligated to, which they're not. Rome has made that quite clear. But, you have some bishops out there who are saying that you're committing a sin if you do not get the jab, as we call it.
Yeah. So It seems like, you know, that I know when I work for a diocese, I discovered there's actually a lot of canonical protections, in at least in on paper, for priests that a bishop can't. I think a common Catholic misperception, Catholic laity misperception, is that a bishop can do whatever he wants with a priest and the priest has no say in it. And I found that's not actually true, that the priest does have certain rights under canon law. He can't appeal to Rome and things like that. And it sounds like that's exactly what you did and you won. You won temporarily, at least, but yet there it seems like that bishops are just going around this and they're not really using, they're finding loopholes in canon law. How is it how is it that Rome can't step in? Like, let's just use your case as an example and say, listen, this non-judicial, non-penal thing makes no sense. We're going to just say, no, you have to let him be a priest or at least clear his name or something like that.
Well, to be honest with you, that's exactly what the Congregation for Clergy said to Bishop Beloy, that yes, you can remove a priest temporarily to make sure that there is no wrongdoing, but you have to put him back into ministry. It has to be temporary, but they never define what temporary is. And so now I'm going on 10 years. I'm going to be 42 this July. I've spent almost all of my 30s out of ministry. And again, no allegation, no accusation has been brought against me. It's just simply the bishop doesn't want to be proven wrong. And what I find amazing, Eric, especially since the Summer of Shame, 2018, when Theodore McCarrick was finally exposed, when we saw that there was and is still a massive cover-up going on amongst many bishops, not all, but many bishops, from the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops all the way to the Vatican. What we have to realize is I'm really surprised how many people still just automatically give deference to a bishop, whether it's mine or another bishop, and just say, well, you know, he has to be careful. Well, we also have to realize that diocesan priests especially are public people, all right? We are known, and so when you remove us, even if you do it in a non-penal, non-judicial way, that causes grave damage and scandal for the priest as well for the laity that he's been serving. And I always look at it this way, that when people say to me, well, you know, Padre Pio, he was removed and he just accepted, you should do that too. Well, Padre Pio was a religious. I'm not a religious. And while Padre Pio was a priest and I'm a priest, there's a vast difference between secular priesthood and religious priesthood. And I think sometimes people, especially even the clergy these days, don't understand the difference. I don't take a vow of obedience to the bishop. The bishop is not the superior general of the Jesuits, and I'm not a novice. I was ordained, and this is clear both in the old rite and in the new rite at ordination. I was ordained and promised obedience as a co-worker with him. The bishop is head of the presbyterate of his diocese. He is not the abbot. He is not the superior general. He is our spiritual father, and he must act like that spiritual father. And he's not doing that. And we need to realize that priests have rights. And Dr. Peter Kwasniewski, who you've interviewed just a few weeks ago on his new book, True Obedience, lays that out quite beautifully. And I like to say that he's going to be at our event this June. He's a great supporter of the Coalition for Canceled Priests. And people need to realize, again, both clergy and laity, that first and foremost, obedience is about listening. And that's one thing sometimes the bishops don't want to do, because they don't want to make it look like that they quite possibly made a mistake in removing priests. They don't like admitting that, sad to say.
You know, why wouldn't it just be easier in these situations if a priest if a bishop like encouraged a priest, like he doesn't like, for whatever reason, but he doesn't really have anything against him. He just doesn't want him to be a priest of his diocese, to basically encourage him to go to another diocese, to a religious order or something like that, and just get him transferred. Because at this point, you're just a thorn in their side. And if he had just let you go, let's say, to another diocese or religious order or something like that, it might have made everybody, it'd be not a win-win, because obviously you'd be kicked out of your home diocese. But the point is, it'd be better than the situation you're currently in.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what a lot of people have to realize, I've often been told or asked, why don't you just go to a religious order? And I always like to remind people, that's kind of like saying, why don't you just get married? It is a completely different vocation. There's three vocations in the church, main vocations: marriage, priesthood and the consecrated life. And now the consecrated life's pretty broad. The consecrated life includes everyone from Carthusians on one end to consecrated virgins and hermits living by themselves in society on the other, and everything in between. But it is still a different vocation from the priesthood. And just like how married men can be priests, religious can be priests. And in fact, the priesthood developed in religious life, especially monastic communities like the Benedictines, because there was a need for priests. Originally, when Saint Benedict started, and he's the father of Western monasticism, and if I may dare say, the father of Western religious life, there were no priests. They just had a local parish priest come in to celebrate Mass for them. It was the diocesan priesthood, which we are a secular priesthood. We are not religious in that sense. And that's kind of odd for people to hear, because they hear religious, they hear secular. They don't understand what those terms mean. Secular means I did not take vows. I took a promise of obedience. I took a promise to pray the office. And I took a promise of celibacy, meaning not to get married. Those are the promises that I took. And so when priests are often asked, well, why don't you join religious life? I just counter saying, well, why don't I just get married? It's a different vocation. Now, when it comes to joining another diocese, it gets a little tricky, because according to canon law, not only do I need to have a bishop that is going to welcome me into his diocese, or this is any canceled priest, not just me, any canceled priest needs to find a bishop who would take him, but he needs permission from the diocese that he's in, the bishop that he's with now, incarnated with, to let him go. There is one exception in the secular priesthood, and I'm sorry if I'm getting a little too technical for some of the listeners. There is what's called Societies of Apostolic Life. That would be the Oratory, the Fraternity of St. Peter, Institute of Christ the King, and many others, Novus Ordo and traditional, that they are secular priests, but they live in community. And I do not need the bishop's permission to join them. However, so many bishops and so many societies of apostolic life are weary of taking priests that have been removed because they don't want a potential lawsuit. You know, many of the bishops today don't listen to their presbyterate. They listen to lawyers. And I don't mean to sound pessimistic about this, but we need to get the bishops back to listening to his presbyterate and the entire presbyterate. Not just the ones that he likes, not just the ones that are yes men and go along and do what he wants. You know, I do a disservice to my diocese and to my bishop if I do not stand up in charity and point out what is going wrong or what he is doing wrong. And we have to be careful, because that has to be done in charity. And I understand that there are many who want to critique certain people in Catholic media for not doing it in charity. And I completely agree, it must be done in charity, but it needs to be done boldly and sternly, saying there's something wrong here where all these priests across the country are out of ministry.
Right. Now, approximately how many priests would you say there are in the states that have been, that your coalition would recognize as canceled?
We're helping right now about 35 to 40.
Okay.
However, there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, across the country. There's over 12 in the Diocese of Rockford alone. Again, these are priests that have not been accused of anything. They've been simply sidelined, canceled, because they either stood up for the truth, whether it comes to liturgy, whether it comes to preaching and catechesis, or whether it comes up to moral issues such as you don't have to take the jab if you don't want it. They just simply get sidelined. So we have probably hundreds across the country, and we're not even a whole year old yet. And I am surprised that we still are helping so many priests right now, 35 to 40. And we have a very vigorous background check that we do. It is confidential. But, and anyone can see it, if you go to our website, canceledpriests.org, you can take a look at the application that priests have to fill out. We have a due diligence team that investigates the priests. We look at references. We go onto the internet. That's either good or bad. One thing that we could give to Google and the other search engines, you simply put Eric Sammons in, and you can get information about Eric Sammons going back 10, 15 years, if not longer. Again, that's good and bad, but it allows us to check on the priest and see, is he actually a priest? And B, did he do something wrong? And I'm often asked, well, would you help a priest who was accused of something but is maintaining his innocence? And I always say, so far, we've not come across that. But if someone applied, we would look at it as a case-to-case basis. Because, Eric, you know as well as I do, everyone deserves due process of law and the right of being innocent until proven guilty.
Okay, so yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more then, because I think a concern some Catholics would have with your coalition was just like, well, yes, we acknowledge there are some priests who are unjustly removed from ministry, but obviously we both know a lot of priests have been removed or should have been removed from ministry because they really did do some terrible things. And so that check you do to make sure that this is a truly what we are calling a canceled priest as opposed to someone who's justly removed from ministry. So you have them basically testifying. And what kind of background checks again do you do? You obviously search on Google, make sure that do you do like an actual criminal background check and or anything of that nature? Are you asking anybody from the diocese where they're from, like what their side of the story is or anything like that?
We do. Dioceses usually do not cooperate at all.
Yeah.
They will not tell us anything, claiming that they can't. And in certain senses, they can't. So we go with references. We do a background check. We do have law enforcement officers or retired law enforcement officers that are part of our due diligence team. We have had the FBI agents even check our application and give us advice. And we're always looking to improve it. There's no 100% surety that we're going to have a priest that hasn't done something wrong. All right. But I'm very proud of the fact that we have a very, very strong committee that does an excellent background check. And I always like to remind people, just because a background check hasn't proven anything, and St. Paul says this, who's the greatest sinner? And he said, I am. We are all capable of great sin. And just because we haven't committed that sin yet, doesn't mean it might not happen. But at the same time, we just can't simply put priests aside who haven't done anything wrong and just simply say, well, you know what? He might do something wrong, so it's better that we put him to a side. That's actually one of the arguments with Bishop Molloy. Bishop Molloy basically says about my case is, well, Father Lovell hasn't done anything wrong, but we're concerned that he might do something wrong. Well, Eric, you know as well as I do, we're all capable of probably doing something wrong if we allow ourselves to go down that road. And I don't care if we're a saint or the greatest sinner, we're all capable of falling off that mountain of ascent.
Yeah, it sounds like that Minority Report movie. I don't know if you ever saw that, where they're like predicting crimes in the future and you get punished before you even do something.
Exactly.
You know, it's kind of dystopian there. Now, what exactly, so when a priest is approved and he's part of the coalition now, what exactly do you do to support them?
Surprisingly and happily, many of the priests that come to us simply ask for spiritual support. They don't necessarily need financial help immediately, but they do realize that for a rainy day that might come along. But we do have priests that apply. In fact, one just applied today, and our due diligence team did the background check and brought the priest forward to us this morning and basically said, this priest is not even being allowed to get paid by his bishop. And most canceled priests, when they get removed, they get their pay cut. They have to find their own housing. And when this priest came to us and said, basically, I need help because my bishop isn't paying us, the first thing that goes through my head is, we got to make sure he has a meal. You know, we have to make sure that he's being fed. We're going to have a couple of priests at our conference in a couple of weeks who are given nothing by their diocese. They're not given a stipend. They're not giving mass intentions. They're not even given health insurance. And the bishop is supposed to give all priests health insurance. That's in canon law. And that some bishops should simply ignore it. Now, to give credit where credit is due, I'm given health insurance by Bishop Molloy. He gives me $1,700 a month gross to live on. Gross meaning before taxes. All right. But in the state of Illinois, you cannot live on $1,700 a month. Rent alone in not even a great apartment, in a decent apartment or a below average apartment, would still be $1,700 a month. So a lot of these priests are relying on family members and friends. I know of one priest that we're helping for a long time was sleeping on the couch of his retired mother. You know, I mean, she had a one-bedroom apartment. She had the bedroom. He had the couch in the living room. You know, this is unacceptable, in my opinion. All right. Priests deserve to have the right to defend themselves and not have to be worried about what is going to happen. And what's happening and what we're seeing, that there's so many priests in active ministry who are staying silent because they see what is happening to canceled priests and they don't want to become one because they realize they can't afford to defend themselves. Canon lawyers are not cheap. While they're not as expensive as attorneys, many canon lawyers charge $250 an hour. Well, Eric, do the math. Just with my own stipend, $1,700 a month, if I have my canonist do 5 hours of work in 1 month, just 5 hours of work, that is more than half of my paycheck. That's just unsustainable. So we're here to make sure that priests always have access to a good canon lawyer, have access to an attorney if they need it. We're going to make sure that they have a place to live, and we're going to make sure that they always have a meal and they don't have to worry about that. And that kind of brings us into my next point, is the property that we're hoping to purchase in Northwest Indiana. We're right now paying rent for priests to stay in apartments. That's not sustainable in the long term. And at the beginning of this year, the coalition was not looking for any type of housing, but a famous archbishop, I won't say his name, called me from Italy, and he said, "Father Lovell, you need to find a house for these priests to live in. These priests need a home." And surprisingly, that very day, I remember it was January 5th, a friend from high school, not knowing that I spoke to this archbishop, sent me a Zillow link for an old Franciscan friary. And he said to me as a teacher, "Wouldn't it be great if we could turn this into a boarding school?" And so I went a few days later with a board member and took a look at the property. It was 61 acres of just rolling hills, woods, ponds, dedicated to Our Lady of Lourdes. They have three grottos, and the building, surprisingly, was in very good shape for being 80 years old. It does need cosmetic work on the inside, but I thought, you know what? It has a chapel and it has a refectory. This would be a wonderful place for priests to live that have no place to go, or even just make a retreat. And then it came to be known the community, Cedar Lake, Indiana, does not want to see this destroyed and turned to subdivisions. And I thought, you know what? This is just saving another Catholic heritage site and turning it again into a pilgrimage site. So we're hoping to turn the building, one side of it, into a house for priests that would be private, just for the priests. And then the other half of the house, we would turn into a retreat center. So that is what we're working on in addition to our conference that's coming up.
Yeah. So this house, how much are they asking for it?
They're asking for $2.1 million, which in honesty is a steal, because it's 61 acres. It's tax assessed at about $4.3 million. Obviously, as a 501c3, as a non-for-profit charity, we wouldn't have to pay taxes on it, similar to the church. So we would be able to, if we were able to raise the money, and we do have a lot of big donors coming forward, we do have the property under contract, it will just be a great place for priests to come. Again, either short-term or long-term. And I'm often asked, well, will the priests have to pay rent? Are they going to have to pay their way? Well, of course, it's all going to be depending on the priest's needs, okay? If they're able to pay some rent, great. If they're able to work, physically work around the property, great. We would expect them to do that. You know, it's not just going to be for priests to loaf around, okay? We want to make sure that priests can be priests, and we establish a community life, Eric, because the problem in the last 60 to 70 years amongst the diocesan priesthood is that we've kind of become like a bachelorhood, you know, priests living by themselves, doing their own thing. And in the long run, that just causes problems. Everyone, celibate and married, need to live in community. Okay. Sometimes it's not easy. As you well know, married life is not, you know, joyful every single day. There's ups and downs. That's true with every vocation, you know, so we want priests to be able to enjoy a place to live, have an altar to celebrate Mass on, all right, to be able to come around a table and eat dinner together, you know, and just have that community life. Because when I was first removed, and this is true of so many priests, Eric, you're shell-shocked. Again, you're this public person who's been removed, okay? You're embarrassed. You don't know where to turn. You don't know what to do. And, you know, the people that you thought were going to take care of you, the bishop and the diocese, all of a sudden are your enemies, you know? And so we want priests who've, again, done nothing wrong to know you have a place to go. You have a place to stay if you need it.
That brings me to another question. So What is the status of these priests when it comes to the celebration of the sacraments? So obviously, I think everybody knows that masses are still valid of any priest who's a priest. And now, but there, I know also that, for example, confessions of a priest that doesn't have I can't think of the word right now. Basically, permission from
faculties.
Thank you, faculties. That's what I was looking for. Doesn't have faculties is not valid, and you know, but I know there's some cases of exception to that and things like that. So, for example, I mean, just, you know, what is the status of the sacraments that you would celebrate, another canceled priest would celebrate? Do you just have to basically do a private mass for yourself and you can't hear confessions? Is that generally the status?
Yeah, well, what's interesting, there's different types of canceled priests. So there are a couple of priests, even in my diocese, who have not had their faculties removed in a non-penal, non-judicial way like myself. They still have faculties, but if they try to go and help out in a parish, or if they try to go help out outside the diocese, the bishop will not give them a letter of good standing. You know, it used to be, it's what we used to call a celebrant. It used to be a card about the size of a credit card that priests would carry in his wallet. And so when I would go outside the diocese, for example, when I was in Washington, D.C. and wanted to celebrate Mass at the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, I would just simply have to show them that card that was given to me every year by the diocese saying that I was a priest in good standing. It was usually in Latin, so you could take it around the world, and it showed wherever you were going, like if you were on pilgrimage, I'm a priest in good standing, I can celebrate Mass. Well, in the last 20 years, especially because of the Dallas Charter, bishops are now requiring not the celebrant anymore, but they want a letter of good standing that is less than 30 days old. Less than 30 days old. And a lot of priests have to scramble. I'm talking now active priests. Even if they want to go on a retreat somewhere or go on a pilgrimage, to get this letter of good standing within 30 days, because chanceries normally don't move that fast. Mm-hmm. And so it's becoming a hurdle for them. So, but we have some priests who haven't had their faculties removed in the diocese. They just simply can't help out anywhere because no pastor wants to use them. They don't want to be touched. They don't want to be accused of guilt by association. And then these canceled priests can't go outside the diocese because they won't give them a letter of good standing. You know, for myself, I can tell you this. I was going to, about 5 years ago, 2017, I was going to go to a former student's wedding up in the Diocese of New Ulm. I was not planning on concelebrating. I was simply going to sit in choir. That means sit in cassock, which is what I'm wearing right now, and surplice. All right. Well, the pastor threw a fit and said he still needed a letter of good standing. And I said, why? I'm not doing anything. I'm just simply sitting there in the sanctuary with the priests witnessing this marriage, and as everybody else is. And finally, the vicar general called and said, well, we'll let you attend. You'll just have to sit with the laity. You can still wear clerics if you want. And I said to him, I said, Father, I can't remember his name. Father, you can't tell me if I can or cannot wear clerics. It's as simple as that, you know, and for you to say that I could just, you know, it's no big deal. I could just simply sit with the laity. What I always like to remind people, the reason why we have a sanctuary and why priests sit with priests, bishops sit with bishops, and the laity sit with the laity is to show that there is a hierarchy in the church. That doesn't mean that I'm better than the laity or that the bishops are better than me, but it shows that there's different offices in the church. And that is so essential, especially for the young to see, because when you just have priests sitting with the laity and vice versa, they're going to say, I don't know what the difference is between being a priest or getting married. Why would I want to become a priest? It doesn't seem like there's anything worthy about it. You know, I mean, I'm just as good of a person as they are. And in one sense, they are. But at the same time, people have to realize that there are distinct offices in the church. You know, so for myself, I can only celebrate Mass privately, according to Bishop Molloy. I think what he's doing is illegal. I think he's sidestepping canon law. Canon law makes it quite clear, and forgive me, I don't have the book in front of me right now, but it does, canon law makes it quite clear that you can only remove a priest's faculties to hear confessions for a grave reason. Not because you're worried that he's going to do something. It has to be something that he's actually done, and it has to be grave. And so I always remind people that I believe that this is an illegal act. Whether Rome agrees with the bishop or not is beside the point, because I can read canon law. And I don't mean to sound arrogant when I say that. I'm just simply saying is that priests were, especially diocesan priests, were ordained to serve, not ordained to sit on the sidelines.
Right. Now, a lot of priests, I think, recently, in the past 2 years, if they've spoken out against the COVID regime, they've gotten in a lot of trouble. And so I know there's a priest recently, Father Peter Williams, I think it is, in Vermont.
Correct.
Forgive me, but I'm forgetting some of the story right now, but I believe he got canceled by his bishop as well for, and wasn't against speaking against the COVID vaccine or something like that.
Father Peter Williams, a priest of 35 years. Surprisingly, back in January, I was in Vermont for a COVID conference, and it was actually interdenominational. It was actually at a Protestant church in quotation marks. And the host that I was staying with, who was Catholic, said, "We have this priest in the diocese, Father Peter Williams, and he's doing YouTube videos about why he should not have to force people to take the vax. You should get in contact with him because I think he's about to get canceled." And we tried to connect, but being from Illinois, I didn't realize actually how large Vermont was. His parish was actually 3 hours away from where I was talking. And I thought, well, I didn't realize that you could drive 3 hours in Vermont and still be in Vermont, but apparently you can. And so we weren't able to get together. So I just wrote him a handwritten note and said, "Father, if you need anything, if you need any help or support, let us know." Well, a few weeks later, he got canceled and he approached us, and he was basically canceled because he wasn't telling people not to get the vax. He was telling people that they have the right to refuse to get the vax. And that's quite telling. Okay. One could make the argument that you shouldn't say, "Don't get the vax." I don't believe that. I don't think anybody needs to get the vax if they think that they don't have to. And especially in consultation with their doctor. But for someone to come out and say, "Look, it's up to you to make that decision, your body, your choice," and they're being canceled for saying that is quite telling where we are as a church and as a society as a whole, because you see people getting fired constantly for standing up for what is right and standing up for their own conscience and standing up for their own rights. And it's quite sad. And so we're helping Father Peter Williams now. Great priest. He's spoken at a couple of our events, and I was happy to see that we both went to the same seminary, Mount St. Mary's. He's a great, great, great man, and I'm glad that he's with us.
Now, what was the reason, the public reason that the diocese gave for canceling him?
A few things, and forgive me, I don't know all of them off the top of my head. I do remember one was that the diocese apparently of Burlington, Vermont, claimed that he was not going to the hospitals to anoint people. And it turns out he was actually one of the few priests that was going to the hospitals to anoint people. He was going, despite of the risk of transmitting COVID, he was still going because he realized how important it was to anoint people in the hospital. I mean, Eric, if you recall, there were bishops, Cardinal Supich being one of them, who was saying, "Well, you need my permission even to do emergency baptisms." That is a complete falsehood. And I tell people, if someone needs to be baptized, you are morally obligated. I don't care if you're a priest, a deacon, the laity, you are morally obligated to baptize that person, period. And I often told priests, because like in my own diocese of Rockford, Bishop Malloy said, "Well, we're going to have certain priests that are going to go and anoint people in the hospitals, you know, so we could, you know, lessen the risk of spreading COVID." And I told my friends who are still in active ministry, priests that are still in active ministry, if you get the call, you are morally obligated to go and do that. I don't care what the bishop says, all right? You are morally obligated to anoint somebody when you're called, regardless of the risk to yourself. And see, for the bishops, they don't get that anymore. You know, what we saw 2 years ago when they shut down all the masses and in many places locked the doors of the churches is they basically sent a message to everyone in the church, the sacraments are non-essential.
Right.
And what's the most essential thing in the world? The sacraments.
Right.
Chief among them, the Blessed Sacrament. and receiving that. And I don't mean to sound critical of all the bishops, but I'm still waiting for a bishop to come forward and say, you know what, we made a mistake in doing that. And I promise you, as long as I'm the bishop of my diocese, that's not going to happen again. Okay. It's one thing to dispense people and say, look, you're worried about getting COVID, please stay home. It's another thing to lock the doors of churches and turn your backs on people who are dying in hospitals. I'm sorry, I can't stand for that. I need to go and anoint somebody. I'm going to go and anoint somebody. And what I want to remind everybody is all priests, even laicized priests, Theodore McCarrick even, is morally obligated in an emergency, in case of death, to anoint somebody, to baptize somebody, to give them the sacraments, plain and simple.
Yeah, it really, I'm waiting for that first apology from a bishop as well. I mean, that would go a long way just to say, you know, listen, I mean, okay, you made a mistake. People make mistakes. It's a horrific mistake that showed that you didn't put souls above physical health, but still, we can repent. I mean, that's the whole point of our faith, is that we can always repent of what we've done in the past. And I think, though, like, just what you were saying is, like, there's this inversion, this the way canon law is being used against us, against the faith, because I know the last canon of the canon law basically says the whole law is for the salvation of souls.
Exactly.
And so anything, now, of course, that can be, we can abuse that concept and think, act like Protestants, do whatever we want. But ultimately, when you say you can't go do something that's going to bring about this person's the salvation, for example, anointing of the sick is a great example of that, then that's clearly, I don't care what canon you spout off, it doesn't matter, because it gets overturned by the canon that it's all for the salvation of souls. And I do feel like that becomes very pharisaical, where you're very much looking at the law, the canon law, but it's a canon law, which we need canon law. Don't anybody think I'm saying that we don't need canon law in the church. We need it for an organized society. At the same time, it's for the salvation of souls. It's for the service of us. We're not made for the law. The law is made for us. And so, I mean, I think this example of Father Williams is a perfect one, where he's just giving, you know, just good advice about the advice that's frankly in tune with what the church actually teaches about these vaccines, that you're not nobody's obligated to get it. So it's unfortunate that he's joined your group. It's unfortunate anybody joins your group. I'm sure you don't want anybody to have to join you guys.
I look forward to the day when we can disband.
Right, exactly.
And I often have people say, well, Father, are priests going back into ministry? And yes, we do have some canceled priests that have been put back into ministry, praise God. But I think a lot of times people think our end game at the coalition is to make sure all priests are put back into ministry. And while I would rejoice at that, I want to be put back into ministry, our main goal at the coalition is not to make sure every priest is put back in, but to make sure that every priest is able to get due process of law.
Right.
So he can fight that good fight and protect his good name. You know, that is what we're entitled to. Everyone, we talk about canon law. Canon law makes it quite clear that all Catholics deserve the right to defend their good name. You know, and so to be just sidelined for years is just so sad, because they often say to me, well, you must have done something wrong. I mean, really, Father? I mean, would the bishop do this? And I just, again, I point back to McCarrick and the cover-up by so many bishops in regards to what he did. And I just want to remind people, I'm like, look, you want to keep giving them the benefit of the doubt. And at first you should do that. They're the bishops. They're the successors to the apostles. But when you see a problem that is so chronic, so many priests across the country being sidelined, being canceled, you know, you have to step up and realize, look, we're paying for this. You know, just in the Diocese of Rockford alone, 12 priests that have done nothing wrong that are sidelined, that how many confessions could have been heard? How many people could have been anointed by those 12 priests in the last 5 to 10 years since they've been removed? I mean, that's what I always want to remind people of that. And I made it quite clear, you know, if there's someone dying in the hospital, I will go and anoint them. All right. I will go and anoint them because I have that right as a priest, okay, and the bishop can't say otherwise. If it's an emergency, if it's a case of death, I am given those faculties. I'm even given the faculty to confirm if it's in danger of death, all right? because the church wants the sacraments to be available to people. And so we have to get back into that mindset, you know, and often people say to me, well, Father, we need to get these priests out here to teach us what's right and wrong. And I agree, we do. All right. But I often want to remind the laity, and I want to thank Crisis for doing this. The laity have to sometimes pick up a catechism, a good catechism, and actually learn the faith and teach themselves. You know, I mean, this is the importance of this. You can't just rely on the priest to tell you what is right and wrong and tell you what to do. You know, you have to stand up, pick yourself up by your bootstraps, and learn your faith. You are obligated, if you're a confirmed Catholic, to always be in constant formation. And so I thank Crisis and all of Sophia Institute Press for doing an excellent job helping the laity discover their faith.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Let's talk about this conference that's upcoming. So it's on the 23rd and 24th of June. And so tell us the details about it.
So our primary patron is St. John the Baptist, and we launched the coalition on June 24th, 2021 in Lombard, Illinois. We had over 1,000 people come. And at the end of October of last year, both Craig Holly, who's the co-founder, and myself, I'm the other co-founder of the coalition, said, wouldn't it be great if we have a one-year anniversary event? We're 7 months away. And I thought, yeah, let's just get a hall, try to get 1,000 people again. That would be great. Well, come to discover, everybody is frantically trying to get a hall, and most places we were going to were already sold out. And then we had the conundrum in the state of Illinois, where we still had the draconian mask mandates. We still had, even in Cook County, you had to show proof of vaccination to get into events. And so we thought, you know what? Let's find something outside the diocese of the state of Illinois, and let's see what we can do. And so we found a great convention center in Beloit, Wisconsin. And so often people say, well, why Beloit? Well, to be honest with you, it is a very easy drive from Chicago, from Milwaukee, from the Twin Cities, from Madison, from Des Moines, from St. Louis, and many other places. It's really the center of the Midwest. It's along the I-39, I-90 corridor. It's in Malloy's backyard, just north of the Diocese of Rockford, as what we like to say in Chicago, across the Cheddar Curtain in Wisconsin, right on the border in the Diocese of Madison. And we wanted to have a two-day event. We decided to do a banquet Thursday night. We're going to have Jesse Romero, who I believe you've had on Crisis Point, as our keynote speaker. And then we're going to have an all-day conference on Friday that's going to feature Dr. Peter Krosnewski. It's going to feature David L. Gray, Michael Hitchborn, Dr. Janet Smith, Liz Yor, Father James Altman, myself, and many more. And we just want to encourage everyone to come. Now, as of the recording of this podcast, which is Friday, June 10th, I would like to remind people, we do have tickets left for both days, but we need to get the food order in for Thursday evening by Monday evening, June 13th at the latest. So if you're thinking about coming, please buy your tickets for Thursday night. If you want to buy tickets for both events, you can. If you want to buy a ticket just for Thursday or just for Friday, you can. And for those that are thinking of coming Friday, we need to get the food order in by the 16th of June. And it's going to be just a great, great time where Catholics can come together. And so often people say to me, well, I want to support them, but can't I just watch it live stream? Can I just watch the recording afterwards? And I like to remind people of this, that coming together and meeting fellow Catholics who believe what you believe and who are standing up for what you're trying to stand up for, it's a psychological boost. And we're going to have 16 canceled priests, at least at the last number count. 16 canceled priests are coming from across the country for people to meet. Not just Father Altman, not just myself, 16 canceled priests. Wouldn't it be great if we could get 500 people to show up? We can only fit 500 people, by the way, for Thursday night at the banquet. We already have over 300, if not close to 400 tickets sold. But wouldn't it be great if we can have 500 people show their love and support to these canceled priests from around the country? You know, that's what we want, because we want to be a national conference and a national organization. And it's falling this year on a great date. Usually June 24th is the feast of our primary patron, John the Baptist, but he gets transferred to Saturday because this year, June 24th, is the Feast of the Sacred Heart. And if you remember, Eric, about 12 years ago, Pope Benedict XVI issued an apostolic letter declaring the year of the priesthood, going from the Feast of the Sacred Heart 2009 until the Feast of the Sacred Heart 2010. And it's a beautiful letter on the importance of having the heart of Christ. And people have to realize, too, as we're getting bombarded with Pride Month, Catholics need to realize this is the month of the Sacred Heart. This is the month of Jesus Christ, and that we have to proclaim that from the rooftops.
Yeah, amen. So I assume the way people can sign up for and get tickets is through your website, right?
Correct. Go to canceledpriests.org. You could find more information there about buying tickets. Again, for one day, if you just want to do the banquet or just want to do Friday, or you can buy tickets for both days. You do get a discounted ticket if you get it for both days. You could also more information about helping us purchase this property in Northwest Indiana and just get a better general sense of what we do as a coalition, not only seeing the application that priests have to fill out, but to see some of the stories that priests have done for us. For example, we have testimonials from Father Altman, Father Michael Suey in Michigan, and Father Mark White from Virginia.
Great. That sounds great. And I'll make sure I link to it on the show notes here so people can know, can easily get to it. I really appreciate your time here, Father. This has been great. I you know, hope that your work continues. Actually, I hope your work eventually ends.
Yeah.
But anyway. Too. Yes, exactly. So God bless you. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Eric. You have a wonderful day. God bless you.
Thank you. And everybody else, God love you.